Jen, I start out with a few questions that we're stacking up, and then we'll have some meditation and then teaching. Okay, so first question was, what mindset and behavior should we have during a retreat? I realized a lot of us keep looking at our handphones or have a lot of mindless chatter. Should this be avoided? Yes. Okay. When you're on retreat, the retreat is really from ignorance, anger, and attachment. So we want to keep our mind in a steady state, free of distractions. So usually in the US, when I lead weekend retreats that are residential, then we keep silence during the break time, because it gives people more time to really reflect and not have to spend so much time, you know, hi, who are you? What do you work? What do you do? And I'm like this, and I don't like that. No, no, no. You know, because that kind of chatter takes us outside of ourselves. And this is a really good opportunity to be more quiet. So let's do our best maybe tomorrow to, in the break times, to be quieter and more introspective. And regarding your handphones, I know that it's permanently glued to your hand, and that you were born, actually it's not, you were born with a cell phone, with a handphone, and it's inextricably linked to your hand, and you can't separate from your cell phone. I know that, yeah, and that asking you to put your cell phone down is tantamount to asking you to cut off your hand. But it's an interesting experiment. Try putting it away and not looking at it. Just an experiment. Yeah. See if for a day you can make your mind happy without looking at your cell phone. And see if you're looking at your cell phone really makes you happy. Because whenever you open it, you think, there's going to be something really interesting. Somebody will have, you know, texted me that I, you know, something fantastic happened. Has that happened yet? Yeah? What are all the messages on your cell phone about? Hmm? Food. Yeah? Food, politics, gossip. When are you coming home? Love. Yeah. What color do you want to paint this? What do you want to eat for dinner? Really important, urgent things. Okay? So I know it's a tremendous sacrifice, you know, but try. Let's try tomorrow. You know, don't look at your cell phone from the time you arrive until the time you leave. It's only half a day. You think you can make it? Yeah, you think? Okay. Yeah. In fact, you might even consider leaving your phone at home. I know that's heretical to say that. That's why I whispered at you. See how the media, how social media, controls your life. Yeah. And see, what do you really get out of all the text messages and calls and everything like that? Okay, so just check and see. Okay, then, next question. It seems that letting go is taught by Buddhism is conflicting with our day-to-day life, like work or career. I don't think so. What we're letting go of is ignorance, anger, and attachment. We can function on a day-to-day basis very well without ignorance, anger, and attachment. So I don't think that, this what we're letting go of conflicts with your regular life. It makes you change your motivation for what you're doing in your life. Okay? So instead of thinking, oh, I'm going to work so I can make a ton of money and then I can have a nicer car than my sister has and I can have a bigger house than my cousin has. So I'm going to, work hard and get a promotion and get lots of money. And then I'll feel like I'm an important person. So you'll have to let go of that motivation. Okay? But I don't think that motivation is really going to make you happy. So it's probably good to let go of it. Now, what about thinking, I'm going to work to offer service to the customers and clients of whoever you work for? I'm going to work to contribute to society. I'm going to work to give a pleasant feeling at the workplace. I'm going to work so that whatever service we're doing or whatever thing we're producing, somebody, other people may benefit from it. Now, what about changing your motivation for going to work? Let go of the very selfish motivation. You still go to work, but you have a different motivation, so your mind is more peaceful. And at the end of the day, when you come home, you feel like you did something that was valuable for other living beings. Okay, so Buddhism doesn't conflict with these things. It makes you change your motivation. So again, with career, if your motivation is, I'm going to climb the corporate ladder, I want a corner office, and with my name on the door, then ask yourself, is that really going to make me happy? You want a corner office? We'll build something right here. And you can have it. But see, what will really make you happy in your career? And are you trying to, just climb up the stages in your career? For what? So that you can feel successful, so you can make money. But at the time you die, put it this way, I've never heard of anybody on their deathbed saying, I should have worked more overtime. I've never heard of anybody saying that. So at the time you die, if you're not going to regret working overtime, then why drive yourself crazy working overtime now? What people usually regret at death is not being kind to the people they care about. Not creating good relationships with their kids or spending really quality time with their kids. Or people regret, arguments and not forgiving, not apologizing. So in your life, do what's really important. And if you don't have a corner office, that's fine. We still love you. You don't have to show us a corner office and your name card with so many titles on it for us to think well of you. So while I'm kind to others, the other person is unkind to me. So that makes me feel unbalanced and ask myself, should I continue to be kind to that person? So what should I do to get rid of this negative emotion of feeling imbalanced? Or maybe it's thinking that you're getting taken advantage of, something like that. Just be kind because you like to be kind. Don't worry about how the other person responds. Yeah? You be kind because it makes you feel good to be kind. This doesn't mean you need to do whatever the other person wants you to do and go out of your way to follow, to do all sorts of things. I'm not talking about becoming a people pleaser. Yeah, by being kind, I mean you're polite. Yeah, you chat with them. You do, you know, you act in a polite, kind way, daily way. And, you know, and then just feel good about that. And when the other person is, you know, ready to reciprocate, they will. Yeah. But don't make your happiness contingent on their praise or their reciprocation. Because if you say, well, they're not kind to me, so I'm not going to be kind to them. In fact, I'll be kind of mean to them. And then you do some mean things. Are you going to be happier doing mean things? No. So why do them? Okay? Why does a person feel angry and how do we overcome it? Will good karma overcome anger? So why do we feel angry? This is a big question. Yeah, and there's many levels to talk about it. So on the superficial level, usually we feel angry because we wanted something and we're being prevented from getting what we want. Okay? Or we get angry because things aren't working out the way we would like them to work out. We have some expectation and it's not coming to fruition, or somebody's interfering with it, and so we get angry. So you can see right away, yeah, the anger comes because of me, and I am attached to having something be a certain way. I have my idea of how something should be, and that's not happening. So we get angry. What's interesting about anger is we think that anger will solve our problem. Yeah, if somebody is not doing what we want or doing what we don't want, we think that if I am angry at them, that then they'll change and do what I want them to do. Okay. Now flip the situation. When somebody is angry at you because you're not doing what they want, do you change and do what they want just because they're angry? You may, but are you doing it happily? Or are you doing it full of resentment? Yeah, you're doing it because you feel coerced and you're not happy and that's going to come out some other way. Or you just brush it off and say, boom, thank you. So same way, if we get angry at someone else, we think, I'm going to be so mean to them that then they'll decide they love me and do things my way. What do you think? Does it work? I'm going to be so mean to you and criticize you and be angry at you till you decide that you care about me and you're going to do things my way. Does that make any sense at all? Hello? Does it make any sense at all? It's ridiculous, isn't it? Yeah. I'm going to be so mean that you decide I'm good and you're going to help me. It doesn't work that way. If we're mean, either they won't help us and do what we want, or they'll do it, but they're going to be resentful and eventually will pay. Okay. It's kind of like American foreign policy. You do what we don't like and we'll bomb you. Until you decide that you like us and you're going to do things our way, and then we'll stop bombing you. Does it work as a foreign policy?
No.
Okay. It's what ISIS also does. Yeah? We're going to terrorize you until you decide you love us. Huh? That doesn't work. Never has, never will. Domestic abuse. I'm going to beat you until you love me. Huh? Yeah? Sometimes, you know, people feel, oh, you know, my husband beat me, I will be compassionate and forgive him. Buddhism says I should be compassionate. So he beats me. Oh, it's okay. I have compassion for you. You beat me yesterday. You beat me today. You're going to beat me tomorrow. I have compassion for you. I have love for you. I'm a good Buddhist. What? What? That's not compassion. That's stupidity. Yeah? Your husband beats you, you say, bye-bye. I am a worthwhile human being. Beating me is not acceptable. It is totally unacceptable. You don't have to be angry at him. But you know what's right and what's wrong. And you respect yourself. And I'm on it. Why not? Might make him think a little bit. So, back to the question here, what causes anger? On a deeper level, what's going on is we have this notion of I. And the whole way we think of I, meaning the person, we think of ourselves as a rather solid, independent person. I'm here. I really exist. Yeah. Our concept is of a real independent person who should be in control. Yeah. But that's not really the way we exist. Yeah. If we look deeper, there isn't some kind of fixed soul or fixed person. Rather, there's a dependent person, somebody who arises due to there being a body and mind that are joined together. Yeah. So our whole way of thinking of ourselves is actually incorrect, because there isn't some concrete person here. There's a person that's always changing, that depends on a body and mind, that is different moment to moment to moment. Okay? So this wrong conception of there being an independent person is what lies behind the anger. If we see ourselves as dependent, on many, many other factors, yeah, then we're not so tight about things. There isn't this idea of they're taking advantage of me, or I need to be happy, I need to be successful. They should look at me. There isn't this strong notion of I, me, my, or mine. And so then we just kind of flow with things a lot better. But this incorrect way of apprehending the self actually brings us a lot of problems. Because then we think there's a real me, my happiness is more important than anybody else's, I've got to stick up for myself, I want this, I don't like that. Okay, and so greed, attachment, anger, resentment, all those other things follow. There's many layers to understanding our anger. In terms of, you know, can good karma dissolve anger? Actually, it's through transforming our minds that we dissolve the anger. Through learning to look at situations from a different perspective so that we're not suppressing or repressing the anger, but we're seeing the whole situation differently so that we don't get angry to start with. And so a lot of the Buddha's teachings are instructing us on how to see situations differently. Okay. So let's go back to the book here and we'll see if I can find a verse that exemplifies that frame.
Okay.
Here's a good one. When my mind becomes unclear and my heart unhappy, it is the weapon of destructive karma returning upon me for making others accumulate destructive karma. From now on, I will shun enabling others' destructive deeds. Okay? So when my mind becomes unclear and my heart unhappy, yeah? I think we've all had that experience. Yeah? Our mind is, yeah, it's unclear. We can't think clearly, our heart's unhappy, we're disgruntled, we're dissatisfied, you know what I mean, okay? So that kind of mood is the perfect mood that gives rise to anger. An unhappy mind easily becomes angry. A disgruntled, dissatisfied mind easily becomes angry. Yeah, because I want this and I'm not getting it. Okay? So that is what feeds the anger. Yeah. So, you know, it's a suffering situation that feeds the anger. So why is our mind unhappy and our heart, our mind unclear and our heart unhappy to start with? Okay? This is the weapon of destructive karma returning upon me. So remember this morning I talked about Indra's weapon? Yeah? So it's like a wheel and, you know, you act. It represents we act in a certain way and then it boomerangs back to us. Okay? So, why are we unclear and unhappy? It's the wheel of our own destructive karma coming back on us. And what specifically did we do that is now ripening in terms of our lack of clarity and unhappiness? We've made others accumulate negative karma. Now, what does that mean? How do we make others accumulate negative karma? Well, we don't want to do something, so we ask a family member to lie for us. You ever do that? You don't want to do something, like you don't want to go to work? So you have a family member call in and say, oh, they're sick, they can't come to work. When you're fine. But you asked your family member to create the destructive karma of lying. Okay? Or maybe your family member wants to make a modest offering to the temple or to a charity. You know, they want to do something virtuous. And you say, why are you giving the money away? Let's go out to dinner or go on vacation instead. And so you make them regret their generosity and prevent them from being generous. Or maybe they already gave the donation and then you said, why'd you do that? You know, we need the money for the family. You shouldn't go around giving it to other people. I don't care if, you know, they're handicapped or impoverished. I want to go out to dinner. So you make them regret their virtuous actions. Okay? So in that kind of way, we make others create negative karma. Or in your workplace, you ask, you know, if you're in charge, you ask somebody who's below you to lie to close a deal. We do all sorts of things to encourage others actually to create negative karma so that we can get what we want. Not realizing that, you know, what we're doing harms them and it harms us, and all we're getting is a little bit of worldly happiness. Yeah? A little more money or a little bit more whatever, but accumulating negative karma in the process of it. And when you understand karma, you realize that doing that, it's just not worthwhile. Yeah, if you want to be happy, then don't do things that are going to make, you know, that are going to create the kind of karma that bring unhappiness to yourself. Okay? So, you know, a lot of these things of when we make other, you know, encourage other people to do negativity, we do it because we're angry and we want them to, we're angry at them and then we want them to change, or we're angry at someone else and we want them to stick up for us. Something like that. We're encouraging others' negativity. And so the remedy? From now on, I will shun enabling others' destructive actions. So from now on, if I have a friend or a family member, I will encourage them to do virtue. And if they're about to create negativity, I'll try and talk to them in a very skillful manner to see if I can prevent them from doing that. And why do you do that? Not because you're trying to control them and run their lives, but because you really care about them and you don't want them to create the negativity that's going to result in their own misery later on. Okay? Makes some sense? So lots of people, they come to me and they say, my aunt, uncle, grandmother, brother, sister, whoever it is, just died. Yeah? What do I do to create merit for them? And yes, it's a very good intention that you want to create merit and dedicate it for your deceased relative. But what's even better is don't wait until the person dies. When they're alive, encourage them to do virtuous actions. So rather than you, you know, because if they do the virtuous action, they're going to have the good karma. That's much better for them than to wait until after they die when they can't do the virtuous action. And you're just doing some virtue and dedicating it towards them. Okay? So if you really love, you know, different people, encourage them to be kind, to be generous, to be forgiving. Yeah? Don't encourage them to be like my family that holds grudges and passes the grudges on from one generation to the next. Okay? So we have to really think, you know, when we love people, when we want people to be happy, what is the kind of behavior that is actually loving and kind to them? And siding with them when they have arguments, you know? My family, right or wrong. That's not necessarily being kind. Okay? So really think in the long term about, you know, what kind of motivation you're creating, what kind of karma you're creating, what kind of result that's going to bring. Okay? And then that's really the way that you can show a lot of kindness to your family. Encourage them to do virtue. Discourage them when they're doing something that is on the slippery slope of non-virtue. So that was supposed to be the few questions to warm up before we did our meditation. It wound up to be quite long. So maybe we'll just do a little bit more and then we'll close for today. In this book, yeah, the first section of the book, he, Dhammarakshita, the author of the poem, is pointing out all sorts of situations that we often encounter and then discusses the kind of destructive karma we created that brought about that situation, and then tells us how to remedy it. So it's really quite useful. Let's see what else I can find in here for you. Here's a good one. Verse 29. When I delight in afflictions and I'm greatly distracted, it is the weapon of destructive karma returning upon me. For not contemplating impermanence and the defects of cyclic existence, from now on, I will increase my disenchantment with cyclic existence. So cyclic existence, the Sanskrit Pali word is samsara, and it means being born again and again with a body and mind that are under the control of ignorance, mental afflictions like confusion, attachment, anger, and karma. Yeah. So when we delight in afflictions, all sorts of negative emotions and wrong conceptions, and we're greatly distracted, do you ever have times in your life where you're like that? You enjoy getting angry, you really want to tell somebody off, or you're very greedy and you really want to get this, or you're feeling particularly arrogant and you want to show off in front of other people and show them how great you are and maybe make them jealous of you. Do you ever have times in your life like that? For me? You're not me, act like that. No, other people act like that. But not me, I'm sweet. Check out. Okay. You know, we're friends. We can be honest with each other about our faults. Yeah. We engaged in this kind of stuff. So when we're greatly distracted, maybe you've been a Dharma student for a while, and then you're so busy running here and there and here and there, and doing all sorts of things. And your Dharma practice gets neglected, yeah? Because you're so busy, yeah? You have so many things to do. Gotta go here, gotta do that, there, this, do that. I'll do Dharma later. Later. You know that one? I haven't done my daily practice for a while, but I've been trying to monitor my mind during my daily life activities. But tomorrow morning I'll do my daily practice. Really, I will. And then tomorrow morning, oh, I'm so tired. I was up late last night talking to my friends. Oh, I can't do my Dharma practice this morning. I'll do it tomorrow morning. Then tomorrow morning, oh, it's Monday. I have to go to work today. No time to do meditation or Dharma reading this morning. I'll do it tomorrow. And so our whole life goes. We're distracted. Okay? So, what's going on? It is the weapon of destructive karma returning upon me. Okay? So I'm experiencing the result of some actions that I've done before. What have I done before? I have avoided contemplating impermanence and the defects of psychic existence. Okay. So, why is it important to contemplate impermanence and the defects of psychic existence? Why? Because when we contemplate impermanence, it makes us realize that all the things that are distracting us are not going to last very long. So what's the sense of making ourselves so busy and so frantic, running after them, if they're not really going to last very long? Contemplating impermanence also helps us think of our own mortality, and that we're not going to live forever. And then that makes us ask ourselves, well, if I'm not going to live forever, and I don't know when my death is going to come, then what is important to do, and whatever that is, I better do it now, instead of tomorrow morning, and the next morning, and the next morning, and we keep procrastinating. So, you know, why are we having this problem? Being very distracted, very attracted to negativity. Yeah. You haven't had a drink in 2 years, but now you really want to go out to the pub. Yeah. You haven't been gambling for a long time, but now you're thinking, oh, maybe I'll go gambling. These things turn out to be quite damaging to your family and create all sorts of problems. Yeah. So it happens because we haven't really thought about impermanence. We haven't really thought about what is important in our life. Okay? And the remedy, from now on, I will increase my disenchantment with cyclic existence. So from now on, instead of running around seeking worldly happiness, I'm going to think about the happiness of liberation, the happiness of nirvana, the happiness of being free from ignorance, anger, and attachment. So if the idea of nirvana seems a bit abstract to you, here's one way that you can make it maybe a little bit more vivid. For a moment, imagine that anybody, someone could say anything to you or do anything to you, beat you, insult you, humiliate you, whatever it is, but your mind remains completely peaceful. What do you think? Would that be nice? Somebody could call you names, somebody could talk behind your back, somebody could do all sorts of things, but instead of getting upset and angry and in turmoil and in confusion, your mind is peaceful because there's no anger in your mind. When I think about that, I think, wow, I would like that. Well, that's a quality of nirvana, having that kind of peace in your mind so that external events don't trouble you and throw you into chaos. Somebody could steal your things, your house could burn down. But your mind remains calm so that you can deal with these things in a constructive way without getting panicked and frantic and crazy. That would be nice, huh? So that's the kind of peace that nirvana brings. So the remedy to a lot of, our distraction, our dissatisfaction, is, thinking of, the faults of samsara, all this craziness, and the peace and benefits of nirvana, and then shifting our attention to creating the causes for that kind of ultimate lasting state of peace that's never going to disappear. Okay? So I think that's a good point to end the day. Think a little bit about the quality of nirvana. And realize that as human beings, of course, all of us want happiness. None of us want to suffer. And we should have happiness. Why not? Nothing wrong with desiring happiness. But when we desire happiness, let's look for the happiness, the double A kind of happiness. Not that F kind of happiness. Let's look for the A-plus kind of happiness that's going to be long-lasting, that's going to be really peaceful in our own mind, and seek that instead of the happiness of just running around, so I can go here and watch this movie and run around and go there and get this thing and run around here and do this and that. But to really see something that's more stable inside. So that no matter who we're with, no matter what is going on around us, our mind is peaceful. Okay. So with that, let's dedicate the merit. And tonight, think about what you've heard. Think about it. And if questions come up, write them down. We'll talk about them tomorrow morning. And then tomorrow morning we'll continue. So we'll do the short two-verse chant. And then we will do the refuge, the chanting in English, today because the three verses of refuge are also three verses of dedication. We're dedicating for the so that all beings can meet the great way, so that all beings can generate the wisdom of the Buddha, so that all beings can come together as a community, a virtuous community. Okay. So we'll do this chant, then we'll stand up and do the chanting. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore.
Each and every. Amen.